time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Start off by wishing everybody a very happy and prosperous new year. Talk about a heck of a way to get the markets going. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're grateful to have you as our listener. And thanks for telling others about this podcast. We are very well known in the industry already, but I want to make sure everyone in the industry is aware of this information being presented here. It's a good overview of all that's happening, and our commitment, again, is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. So I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Arch MI, the creator of the Innovative Rate Star program, Black Knight, the leading provider of integrated software and data analytics solutions. Man, there's some interesting stuff. And then also Open Mortgage, the leading buyer of reverse mortgage and the home of the top LOs in the country. Also, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. These two collaboratives, which we are members of, both from the podcast standpoint as well as the Transformational Mortgage Solutions. We're members of both these co-ops. And what these two co-ops do, independent of each other, is create opportunities for mortgage professionals in the industry to really connect and form meaningful relationships. And it is so much about a relationship. They said it's what you know versus who you know. And I think it's important you know this business, know it well. It's also really important that you understand who's making things happen in the background. So anyway, be sure to check out both of them, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. Also, a special thank you goes to Velma, a fast, efficient, effective way of getting your message out to your customers. We use it for the podcast, get the message out. Thanks to Brett Emler and team. They do a great job. Also to Knowledge Coop, Ken Perry and Nathan Nottingham. They're at Knowledge Coop. They do an innovative way, a fun, easy way to do training for mortgage lenders. Grateful to have them as sponsors. And as we talk each week, a special thank you goes out to Alice, Andy, Joe, and Alan. So anyway, it's good to have you all with us. Let's see here. I want to take a quick look at the digital business card. I always talk about this. If you're not checking out the digital business card, if you're handing out the old paper card, you know what, folks? It's just not working as well as this digital business card. I use this constantly at conferences, and I'm getting so much feedback. What's so nice about it is when you hand out a digital business card, you can put in videos and information about your services. It's so much more compelling. It's almost like having a website in your wallet. You just people are amazed at how quickly you can share information. Head over to our website and check out what is going on there with this new digital business card. Encourage you to consider it. It's a great tool. Want to get that word out. Also, the TM Spotlight, we've got Les Parker with another music parody. Again, Les mixes in music parodies amongst the message. A lot of people call and say, yeah, I get it. You look and you've been encouraging me to listen, starting to understand what he's trying to say here. It's actually pretty clever. So, Les, what you got for a music parody this week?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Loan Logic. It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the growth slowdown yelling and central banks telling you be of good cheer, it's the most wonderful time of the year. Global equity markets do not ring good cheer, but central bankers insist prices are stable and wages are rising in an orderly fashion. So, no accommodation is needed. Take the punch bowl away. The free market offers the most wonderful times ahead. Meanwhile, back to today, thin market conditions, low volatility, and the short-term technical picture point to consolidation in the 10-year yield between 275 and 286. Forget that calm markets lead to complacency and reckless behavior. It's the most wonderful time of the year. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
How he pulls it together is amazing. I love it. That's good job, Les. And, of course, Gary Kentrebone, I always give him a shout out because he's the one that pulls it all together, makes it work from an audio standpoint. So kudos to you, the team there, and check out the tmspotlight.com. Sign up for Les's daily newsletter. A lot of good information there. Let's run over to Open Mortgage, Scott Gordon with the Science of Sales. It's a very popular segment that we're having and featuring each week. Everyone wants to know, what is he saying? Yeah, a lot of feedback. This is a great way for advertisers. By the way, I always say, use this as an example when you're telling your message or trying to communicate. Do you want to knock on the door? Hi, I'm open for mortgage. I'd like to have you come and work for me. Or do you find a way of providing free information to someone so that they have insights as to what you're about and how you think? That's what Scott does. He does it extremely well. And I want you to listen to this segment of The Science of Sales.
Stories help customers relax and listen. They're memorable. They establish trust. And most importantly, they speak to the part of the brain where decisions are made. We make subconscious, emotional, and sometimes irrational decisions with one part of our brain. Then we justify those decisions with another. Stories provide depth and context to facts, which leads people to making secure and informed decisions. One poll found 30% of strangers are trustworthy. But when you asked what percentage of people you know, the median answer jumped to 70%. Telling a story is the most effective way to make someone feel like they know you. Stories provide glimpses into your world and invite your customers to tell you their stories. This cements trust between the parties, and once you have a customer's trust, you've usually got their business. A 2013 study found that only 1 in 5 sales calls provides enough stories to satisfy the customer. So why tell a story? Because it works. If this sounds too good to be true, it's not. It's just the science of sales.
Good job. Scott does a great job with these, and he's got a great team that supports him. If you're looking for a new home to originate loans, make more money, and also learn about the innovative, or I guess it's not so innovative. It's been around for a while, but it certainly will help your bottom line. That's reverse mortgages, and Open Mortgage does a great job. But check it out at openmortgage.com. Also, check out all the videos they have while there. Joe Farr, good to have you on the podcast as always.
Hi, Dave. Happy New Year's to you. Recording this on Sunday, so I won't be talking about the markets happening during the day, but we'll talk about last week and then look at the week ahead. You know, as has been the case for much of December, the markets were volatile again last week. This time, though, the week ended with both stocks and bonds improving. The Dow gained over 600 points, and MBS prices rose about 20 basis points. So the average, or the yield on mortgages, fell 3 or 4 basis points, which was good to see. Again, uncertainty remains the driver of all this volatility. You know, how far will global growth slow is a big question. How long will the trade war last? How long will the government shutdown last? You know, will Great Britain find a smooth way out of the EU? Where will the Mueller investigation go? You know, a new one crept into focus this week. It was short-lived, but at one point there was the concern that Trump may try to fire Fed Chair Powell. The answer to that is that he cannot do it without cause, so that quickly dissipated, but it was a new concern in the market that lasted a little while. Last week, there was really very little economic data. Consumer confidence came out, and even though it was still high, it did fall more than what was expected. The drop was the biggest drop since 2015, so it's important to see the consumer confidence number remain high because they represent a big part of what drives our economy. And home sales activity, and November pending home sales came out. You know, that measures contracts signed during the month. This was November contracts signed, and these are to buy previously owned homes. That measure fell again. This month it fell by 0.7. And this is now a 4-year low. It's 7.7% below last November. But over December, we've seen about a 50 basis point drop in mortgage rates. So maybe that's going to help spur a little more activity in that pending home sales number. In November, the new home sales data that was supposed to be released on Thursday was not released due to the government shutdown. Now, looking at the week ahead of us, the Monday's last trading day of the year, and that generally comes along with some market volatility, so, you know, that could happen on Monday. The markets are closed on Tuesday. And then later in the week, we have pretty significant economic events to be released. On Thursday, the ISM Manufacturing Index for December will be released. And then on Friday, even though it's put out by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the non-farm payrolls data is supposed to be released. This is the December non-farm payrolls data. And it is expected to show about 180,000 net new jobs, no change in the unemployment rate, and a 3/10 increase in average hourly earnings. This is a little bit above last month's increase, which is 2/10. But again, if the number comes in pretty much as expected, it shouldn't have a big effect on the market. So that's my report, Dave. I appreciate all that you've done for this show and including me in the show for 2018, and look forward to 2019 as well. So thanks so much.
Good job. Good report.
Thank
appreciate
you,
it so much. You bet. Let's go out to listen to our friends at Knowledge Coop to provide knowledgeable training in a fun way. Nathan?
At the Knowledge Coop, we work hard to create training that engages and encourages our audience. Once people are engaged in training, they are more likely to stay focused and retain the information that they need to know. So here's your training tip for the week. Next time you have an important policy or bit of knowledge you need to train, do it in short clips. And make sure you sprinkle it in with a little bit of humor. Video training is highly impactful, but only when done in the way we've been conditioned through TV. Videos should be no more than 5 minutes, should get to the point, and humor should be sprinkled through to emphasize the important points. Memories are more powerful when attached to an emotion. If you need help with your company's training, please reach out to us at knowledgecoop.com, and we'd be happy to assist. And that's your training minute from the Knowledge Coop, which strives for easy and fun training for the mortgage industry powered by a smart digital platform.
Yes, it is a smart digital platform, but most importantly, they've got some tools that once you get material up there, you can be using it, repurposing it. There's just so many effective ways of doing training right now. And these guys at Knowledge Coop, Nathan and Ken Perry, that team are so creative. So be sure to go in. If you're looking for ways to innovate your training program, make it more effective, be sure to check them out. KnowledgeCoop.com, located up in the Pacific Northwest, just north of the river right there, separating between Portland, Oregon, and Vancouver, Washington State. Not Vancouver, B.C., Vancouver, Washington. Well, we're going to take a quick break, listen to Jim Jump talk about the Arch MI product. It's been around for a little while now, but if you're not using it, you're missing out. Jim?
Hi, David. Arch MI is happy to be a proud sponsor of the program. Today, I'd like to let your listeners know about RateStar from Arch Mortgage Insurance. RateStar makes it easy to choose what type of mortgage insurance coverage your loan needs. Quotes are delivered in seconds and represent our most competitive Arch MI rates based on the strength and quality of the loan application. That's the power of RateStar. Getting a mortgage insurance quote has never been so powerful or so simple. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, David.
Appreciate it very much. ArchMI, check them out at their website. I'm looking for some of the news and announcements that they've been publishing. Really interesting. All right, folks, we're going to move on over to Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor.
Hi, Dave.
Andy, good to have you here with us today. You are advising people on how to prepare for the year end. Interested to get your thoughts on year end preparation, friend.
You betcha, Dave. A couple of quick opening thoughts, and that is, yes, I can see all the credit cards charged coming through. Two, which is fine. I mean, that's I have no issue with that. That's okay. It's interesting though with this technology that all these big bank credit card servicers give you. I mean, they tell you about everything you want to know. So. Yes, time for the accountants to get out their green eye shades, put them on, go to the closet, get out the brooms and the vacuums, and it's time to do some year-end cleaning. We got the audit starting. We got tax planning we got to deal with because for most people are cash-based taxpayers. So if the business is an S-corp, then we need to incur those costs within the tax year. So you got to spend the money or not spend the money depending on the tax situation. So accounting needs to be doing tax planning. We're getting ready for year-end payroll. We also got to get ready for our year-end financials. So that's a big deal because this year, what are we going to do if our capital starts bumping against the debt covenants with the warehouse line lender, the minimum liquidity calculations for HUD or agency? efficiency limit that we have to submit. So this is a very stressful time, but we've got to look forward to what we got to plan ahead to deal with all this stuff. And I would also suggest that if it looks like year-end capital is not going to come in, I would not put all of my baskets in a great big derivative asset bucket and hope that we can just make more money just because we said. I was just last week with a bunch of CPAs who audit independent mortgage companies, and they're very aware of this tendency of if you're short capital, well, then just say that your pull-through jumped a bunch and your gain on sale is going to jump a bunch so that you can have a bigger derivative asset, which gives you more capital. CPAs aren't going to be okay with that. They're not going to accept that. They're all very focused on going concern risk, liquidity risk, insolvency challenges, even qualified opinions. I can't believe we're even having this conversation where CPAs are talking about qualified opinions, but that is a reflection of what happened to the industry during this year.
Yeah.
So I know it's like, so what that means is that qualified opinion means the CPA issues an audit and says, we think that the numbers are presented fairly, except for we don't think they have enough money, or we think it's presented fairly, but except for we don't think they counted the money right. We think the derivative asset's too high. Or they just disclaim an opinion and say, basically, we can't make an opinion because something bad's going to happen. So these are things that we got to get in front of. We got to plan for. We got to think about. We got to not be surprised on, you know, on March the 15th when the auditor says, oh man, you know, we got to disclaim this, which means that's a bad thing. So we got to get ahead of this. Communicate. I know, Dave, you're a big proponent of this. Let's get out in front of these situations. Let's talk to the warehouse line lenders. Let's talk to our agency reps. Let's let them know what the numbers are looking like. Let's start getting in front of this. Let's, with our warehouse line lenders, you can get forbearance. You can get them to agree to waive covenants, but do not surprise them. Don't call on March the 20th and say, oh, by the way, our year-end financials are going to be released tomorrow, and oh, by the way, we're going to violate every covenant. You know, you'll know what it's going to look like already.
Yeah. So here's a question for you. I've got a question for you. I mean, I think that's great advice. Talk to them in advance. But at some point in time, the banks, the regulators of the banks, when do the regulators come in and start saying to the warehouse lenders, for the correspondent lenders that are owned by banks, and start saying, you know what, you set up these covenants for a reason, yet you keep renewing these lines or continue to buy from them, even though these covenants have been broken. When does that end, Andy? I mean, how much grace and mercy do they get? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah,
or when is the game over? Driven by the regulators, what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, that's a great question. And generally speaking, it's going to come down to performance. And the problem with independent mortgage companies, though, is that performance can change very, very rapidly. And so you can have all the loans purchased off the line and suddenly they stop being purchased off the line. It's not like it's not as predictive as you would think. And so that's why they have to, you know, like a loan doesn't get purchased and then another month later another loan doesn't get purchased. Which reminds me of a story we can talk about some other time, Dave, where you and I went to Florida where the warehouse line lender wasn't getting paid off timely and they were wondering, what's happening here?
Yeah.
Whole other story. That's a fraud story. But you're exactly right. These examiners are going to come into the banks and go, what's up? Why are you?
Yep.
And I think the bank's risk is if they're wrong, if they give grace and mercy and the company fails and loans don't get purchased, that's a problem. Fact of the matter is, though, most of the time, they don't fund a loan unless they know it's going to get purchased. So what might end up happening is funding requests slow down. It's kind of like everybody becomes non-delegated because the warehouse lender has to review the credit decision. So I think what's going to happen is the lenders are going to put more controls on more than they're going to just walk away. But, you know, back in 2008 when this started happening, you and I went around to warehouse line lenders talking to them about issuing lines to people. And, you know, the herd mentality kicks in. And in 2008, we didn't know how bad it was going to get. But still, when banks start shutting down, I mean, stop extending additional credit, it kind of becomes a tidal wave because it's like a magnet. It happens to one and everybody else starts doing it. So not to be doom and gloom. It's the point here is be reasonable, be smart, communicate, get out in front of this, and talk to your warehouse line lenders about what's happening in your business. Now, I'm assuming everybody's going to show worse than they thought, and I've been seeing places where people are breaking their covenants, but it's not always. It's not all doom and gloom. There are some that are doing very well.
No, yes, really, very well. But it doesn't mean that, you know, like what one warehouse lender I was talking to here recently said, a plausible story to how to overcome where things are going is not, we'll see what happens with interest rates. That is not a plan that is exciting or encouraging to the warehouse lender. Well, our strategy is we're going to see what happens with interest rates. Well, oh my gosh. So I think
The warehouse line lenders are not Santa Claus. They're not going to bring you anything that you want. But don't surprise them. Biggest point is don't surprise them. Don't surprise them. Communicate.
It's the counter of Christmas. We like surprises at Christmas, but warehouse lenders do not. They're not.
And have a good plan. Be ready to cut. Be ready to slash and burn. Be ready to do whatever you got to do to get your business making money.
Yeah. You and I both had the privilege of working with Boomit Mortgage when we were together. And I was talking to Toby about it. And he says they're being very, very disciplined about who they keep. And other companies are doing the same thing. And those that don't, unfortunately, are in a compromised situation. So it's tough going for some of them.
What that means, though, is that I agree with that completely. Pick your best. Have a strategy. Have a plan. Have a metric to decide who to keep and who not to keep. But that also means that they're implementing change. That means they're laying off people. So if you haven't started laying off people and you're losing money every month, well.
And it's hard to do at Christmas. I understand the pain of that. I understand the pain of that. It is a tough thing to do at Christmas, but that is a part of our industry. And I have another client that has chosen not to do that. But so they're not going to ruin their Christmas, but they're going to ruin their New Year. So anyway,
What happens when, like GM, what happens when part of this is GM had to because of the collective bargaining? But what happens when you know you're going to lay off a bunch of people? They don't know it. So they go spend $3,000 on their credit card, buy a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
And then on January the 2nd, their credit card bills show up and they don't have a job.
And they have a layoff notice. Exactly right. Yeah. So, no, well, I think
it's actually better.
Beforehand. Yep. I agree too. Let them go into the holidays, you know, realizing what their financial situation is. I agree with that. That's what I advise them, not surprisingly. You and I have worked together so long and so well together for over the years that we kind of think a little bit alike in these kind of things. And our advice is that. Andy, if people want to get a hold of you to get your wisdom, how can they do so?
Well, they can give me a call or they can shoot me an email. My email is probably easiest because I'm on the phone a lot. Andy@mbs-team.com. MBS like Mortgage Banking Solutions. mbs-team.com or 512-501-2812.
Good. Thank you so much, Andy. Appreciate it. Appreciate you being here. Looking forward to next week's discussion with you as well. All right, folks, we're going to be right back after this brief break from Black Knight.
As housing prices climb, U.S. homeowners are holding more capital equity than ever before. Effectively capturing the equity market could pose a unique challenge for lenders who may be limited by the capabilities of their current loan origination system or consumer lending platform. Lenders looking to streamline their home equity business processes can benefit from Black Knight's LoanSphere Empower loan origination system. Using this robust and intelligent technology, Empower can originate both first mortgages and home equity loans on the same system. This single configurable solution will help lenders improve margins, support regulatory requirements, and enhance customer satisfaction. To learn more about Empower, visit blackknightinc.com today.
Encourage you to check them out. Great company, obviously on the move. They're doing so much. Again, I tell you, go back, listen to Shelley Leonard's interview that we had, and then the one with Rich as well. Great stuff going on, and in this industry, these are exciting times, disconcerting times for many, and I just want to say, folks, make sure you are paying attention to the details in your business. As they say, the devil's in the details. Folks, I'm excited to have joining us on the podcast today, Julian Sato. Julian is someone who I'm just really getting to know, but his expertise is an area where I have intense interest. So, listeners, I'm going to be learning right alongside of you on this important topic. It's a topic of how do we talk? Do we talk success? Do we talk for failure? Does how we talk have an impact on our success? Joining me today is Julian Sato. Julian, good to have you here.
Thank you, David. Nice to be here.
So for those in our audience that do not know you, give us a little bit of your background. Where are you from and how did you get started in what you're doing in the mortgage industry?
So I'm the owner of Pivot to Change, and it's a consulting company here in Dallas, Texas. I got into mortgage basically after leaving the entertainment industry from a kickboxing instructor, from a talent agent. I got into life insurance sales. and that changed my world. And I got really involved in neuro-linguistic programming and personal development training, being mentored by people of the likes like Jim Rohn. And then I got into consulting with Raytheon. And Raytheon invited me to do consulting for them and ended up working with mortgage companies during the major boom during the subprime era. Ended up traveling the country consulting, but infusing a lot of the stuff I learned with Jim Rohn and also with Brian Tracy and that mind space with neurolinguistic programming and eventually emotional intelligence and my studies in neuroscience. And I found a huge gap between what we teach, what we do, and to what we say we want in our industry. And it's a huge gap since then. I've still seen it grow even larger now with technology. We tend to be going down the same path, in my opinion. So that's how I got here. It was a long road, 20 years, but here I am.
Well, NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, is what it's actually saying. And that can almost have a connotation that is, well, you're programming yourself, but we're programmed by something. We do have a software that runs in us, and it is a lot of it what we say out of our mouths, because it gives an indication what's in your heart. There's an old saying says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So let's get into it. But for those that do not understand neuro-linguistic programming, give a good definition. Start getting into it, explaining that for our listeners, please.
Yeah, let me give you a little example. So I tell the story in my seminars. I was teaching my son how to kickbox at age 7. I was teaching him in the garage, hiding from my wife, because she knew that I was teaching him how to box. I would have been in the doghouse. So I'm hiding, teaching him how to throw punches, and then I show him how to avoid getting hit. But he's 7, and so he moved the wrong way, and I hit him in the nose. Now, of course, at 7 years old, his father hitting him in the nose, he wanted to cry. But I knew if he cried, you know, my wife would have heard that. And before you know it, I would have been in the doghouse. And unfortunately, we had no dogs. So I would have really been in trouble. But being that I'm in neurolinguistic programming, I stopped and said to him, look, man, you just took a hit from a grown man. Look at you. You're a kid. And you didn't fall down. You must have superhero powers. I knew you were a mutant when I first saw you born. I knew you were special. And I started talking to him as if he was a superhero and he had more powers than any kid around. Those tears dried up momentarily within seconds. And all of a sudden, he was just, well, hit me again. You know, he wanted to get hit again. You know, so, well, see, that's what neurolinguistic programming is. And what it is that we associate images with words. And when we associate those images with words, they create a chemical interaction in our body, which creates energy, if you will, and it dictates how you should respond. So that is what I teach. I teach that we have to be more responsible to the words we use in our industry, especially the mortgage industry. Being that we're in somebody's world for 22 plus days talking to them about the stresses, it makes them want to cry. And then we say, hey, come back and see me again. So it's just one of those weird anomalies that we need to figure out. And I think our industry really hasn't really thought about that, from a way we communicate in our processing world to the way we even take an application. We completely lost the understanding of neurolinguistic programming. So my mission is to bring that to our market.
Well, it's a great mission, and it's one that's needed. But how do you mix in emotional intelligence with that? They do go hand in hand, but explain to our audience how they do.
Well, that's a great question, because emotional intelligence, in all due respect, has been taglined so much that it's almost been watered down. Emotional intelligence has more to do with really understanding your own emotions, so you can literally not try to understand somebody else's, if that makes sense. If you knew how you operate and knew how your mind works, then you automatically understand people's minds, because it doesn't matter if you're a celebrity, if you're, you know, in a third world country, emotions are emotions. They're universal. And so emotional intelligence is understanding there's basic universal laws when it comes to dealing with the human, and understanding that it's a skill set, but it's not so much about training, because the more you train it, the less, I would say, genuine you become. You almost become salesy. So there was a study done in the 80s, and it was about this whole concept of emotional intelligence. And they found out that psychiatrists weren't helping people. Sociologists weren't helping people. They were helping them about 40% of the time. But if they were to talk to someone, if a person had a problem and they talked to someone that they knew, that cared about, that their issues would deplete about 70% of the time. So they were doing better by speaking to people who genuinely cared for them than they were to speak to someone who was professionally trained to help them. And so emotional intelligence is really about that, learning that it isn't something to be learned, it's something to really attract to yourself. So it's a hard lesson to learn in like a 30-second soundbite, but it's basically that's the difference with emotional intelligence.
In our industry, we almost grow callous to the emotions of buying a home. It's got to be one of the most emotional, stressful things most people go through. And it's so important to understand this and how you can help people with language. But how do you bring the EQ, the emotional quotient, to a transaction? Is it done through how you speak? Talk about that.
You know, again, another great question. And that's the And all due respect to our industry, that's the challenge we're faced with because we're very transactional based. If you think about it, we're asking box questions to be filled in into an application and just to be answered so you can give that answer to somebody else. That comes across as not emotional. It comes across very transactional.
Yeah.
So the challenge, I'll give you a great example of that. We can ask somebody, hey, so tell them, how many kids do you have? How many dependents do you have is really the question in the 1003, mm-hmm. correct?
Yep.
So we might have heard the person said, me and my family are looking to buy a house. We already know he has a family, but instead of saying, hey, tell me more about your family, we're saying, how many dependents do you have? That's the challenge with emotional intelligence, learning how to have a conversation and hearing what's been said and tie that into a conversation and a caring conversation is key. We'll tell people we need you to provide. Think about that. We need you to get us. We need you to explain. We need you to explain just reminds me of everything, like my kid hitting in the nose. I'm speaking to a teacher. I'm speaking to someone in authority. I'm in trouble. So we have to really understand that we're constantly invading our customers' mind space with stress. And that stress alone is really what's dictating how they feel about the industry, because that becomes a focus point for future purchases. Buying a house means, oh my gosh, here I go again. So that's the key. It's really understanding how to change those words and make it a relationship and not an application.
In your consulting that you do, do you steer the conversation so as to get a positive result? Is it obvious, overt, or is it subtle in how you're doing it? I'm picking up some subtleties that will help guide to a successful experience, which is, by all natural means, a frustrating experience.
Yes. Well, again, it's subtleties, and it has more to do with not trying to be a loan officer. I mean, think about it. The word loan officer, you're pulling me over. I did something wrong. So it's like I teach people not to be a loan officer, to really just be a consultant, somebody who is helping somebody. It might not be about the mortgage in the first conversation. It might be about something else, and that's okay. And that's really the key, is it's very subtle. The fact is we're stressing to get the loan, that we're creating stress in the environment is making that customer feel stress. And they attribute you to that feeling, not to the purchase, but to the feeling that they have when they're in touch with you. So it's very subtle, and it's really more about really the way our philosophy is driven. Our philosophy is driven towards production. And if you put it on the contrast of the realtor, the realtor's philosophy is on dreaming. You walk in a house, you dream, you look around, and you say, wow, imagine
that's
this.
Good.
Imagine
that's a really good point.
Yeah, and then you come to a loan officer, and it's all about, what can you give me? I need this by this.
Transactional.
I'm not going to close.
Yeah.
Very transactional. So how do you convert yourself into more of a real estate mindset as a loan officer, or I shouldn't even say loan officer, as a consultant? How do you do that? It's subtlety, and it really has more to do with your own personal philosophy first. I dig into more about how you think as a person first before we even talk about the business, because you're used to thinking the way you think, and you're so close to the vest that it's hard for you to change unless you realize that you need the change. And so it's very broad. We go into a very broad area first and break through the antiquated way that we do business and then reconstruct it. And that's how I do it. For instance, I know I'm not trying to talk long, but here's the thing. Andrew Carnegie, everybody knows who he is. He had a great, great comment
about
the fact. Yeah, he actually used to tear down his factories every 5 years. He didn't rearrange the factories. He did not design the factories differently. He didn't even put in new processes. He tore them down completely and rebuilt them because he knew, if I keep what's up, I will eventually use what's familiar and I will never really change. So the goal is
amazing.
To break down everything and then rebuild it up. And that way you can really see new ideas and new ways of doing business. And so when I consult, I do a test pod where I break everything down and restart it from scratch and see which one works best and take some pros and cons from each one. And that's how we do it.
I love it because we're into business process improvement. We do a lot of examining of processes, and I'm going to quote you on that. You need to just tear down like Dale Carnegie did with his factories, tear them to the ground and rebuild them up again. That's amazing. And I think we've got a stodgy business that has been doing it the same way for, in my case, I've been in for 45 years, and we've been doing it the same way for the most part all these years. And while we have some innovative things happening, it hasn't been enough because we still are not the most loved people on the planet, loan officers. And so let's start. But on a kind of a technical note, I want to go back and compare neuroscience to neuro-linguistic programming. And one of my family members, when they heard I was doing this, I go, oh, you mean how to be more manipulative? This is not manipulation. It is a process by which you get a successful outcome. And it's, I mean, the way we talk does have a bit of an impact on people's lives. So explain the difference between neuroscience, NLP, and how this is not manipulative.
Great. And it's not. It actually is interesting enough. What it is it teaches you how the mind works. The brain is a doorway for the mind. It is a pathway for the mind to operate. If you were to study the brain, that means you're studying a corpse, right? That's because it's a matter. It's just, but the mind is about neuroscience, how the neural patterns are created. Every thought, every new thought creates a neural pathway. And that neural pathway is strengthened through habitual thoughts of the same thing. So as you learn to ride a bike, it becomes a neural pathway. You don't have to relearn how to ride a bike. Well, put that in the mortgage industry. Think about the habits we have. You know, it's called Hebb's Law, which is basically states that nerve cells that fire together wire together. And so the Hebb's credo is it demonstrates that if you are repeatedly activating the same nerve cells, then each time they turn on, it will be easier for them to fire on again. Neuroscience is telling you, is making you aware of that. So you learn all the things that you're habitually doing, that you are comfortable doing, that even though you're doing it all the time, it's still not getting you to the next level. So if you practice neuroscience and learn how to redirect your neural pathways, you are manipulating your own brain to think differently. But the challenge we're faced with is when we're in stress, like we are in our industry, the body is in survival mode. So it's going to react to the neural pathways that are the strongest. And this is why we're habitually not changing, because our industry is always focused in stress. The stress alone makes us focus on what's familiar, because that makes us feel safer. And because we feel safer, we start trying to find new ways of doing the same thing with just a different cover, if you will. We don't really change. And so the goal for me is to get people to understand this, and we break down everything from the fear factor. We actually bring the fear up front so you can recognize what those fears are, bring them all on the table, and then work through them neuropathically to help you understand how to redirect your thought processes. So neuroscience is really about how the brain functions, not so much how to manipulate others, but really how to manipulate your own thoughts so you can get a better outcome. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. And some could see that and view that as being manipulative, but, you know, it's a conscious act of which you can change an outcome or someone's experience. And it's no different. Is it manipulative to smile and say good morning to someone in a cheerful way in the hopes that you'll lift someone's spirits when you see them? Is it any different than that? So for those that might hear this in a negative tone, that one family member that I was talking to said that kind of sarcastically, I think it's important to have the right language. So let's start talking about how you work with individuals. How is it that you start impacting them? I would assume it's, first of all, creating an awareness that their language is working against them.
Well, it's interesting you said that, because I'm going to use what you just said. If we smile to someone because we are trying to manipulate them, that's one thing. But I redirect that thought. If you smile at someone, what does that do to you physically? It actually creates dopamine. It creates energy that actually is exuded and picked up by the person next to you. They're psychic. They don't know it, but they're psychic. They sense your feelings. You've sensed people that didn't like you. You know, they didn't have to tell you, hey, I don't like you. But you just walked into the room. You can sense that judgment. You can sense those things. You might be incorrect, but you sense something. And so by smiling to somebody, if you focus on by me smiling, by me saying good morning to someone, what that does to my subconscious is it makes me think of me saying good morning. I'm saying good morning to me, and I'm infusing that I'm having a good morning to myself. And because of that, I'm attracting people to me. See, the challenge we're faced with in our industry, and I say this all due respect, in our industry, training is all about what can I do to get. In my development and what I'm doing is I'm teaching how to know yourself so you attract. And that alone is kind of mixing self-development and business development into one program, if you will, because we tend to compartmentalize everything. And we feel like, you know, church is on Sunday, work is on Monday. But in all due respect, if you were to add some of those things you've learned in church to your daily activities at work, you would be better in your job. So the goal is to kind of blend the two, because no matter where you are, you're still there. So I don't like to separate the two. I work on you personally to figure out where your triggers are from your past. I have a program called Neurobiology where I go into your childhood memories and make sure we understand why you're doing this. You might not, and I'm going to say this all due respect, anybody in the mortgage industry know this, any leader, none of your employees grew up saying, I want to be a loan officer. Yeah. None of your employees.
Not many. There's a few, but I don't think there's many.
And none of them said, when I grew up, I wanted to be a processor. When I grew up, I'm going to get yelled at by customers who are mad because I couldn't close them on time. That is not the thing that everybody desires. And so I get into the brain space of knowing that, you know what, you see your job as a threat to your comfort. You don't like what you do. So how do we find what you like about it? And let's focus on that first and build those skills, tighten those up, and then you'll see joy come from that, and then you'll find some more benefits from your job. And that's what I try to do with people from that end.
The name of your company is Pivot to Change, and I love it, Pivot-2-Change. I love the name. And so the process you take someone through is starting with, it sounds like going all the way back to discovering stuff in their childhood. And so that's starting to sound almost like you're someone's going to sit on your couch and you're going to take notes. psychiatrist approach.
I am a behavioral coach. So I tie it all in. So I take the behavioral coaching and I tie that into the development of your personal life, because we put on a facade at work, but we still feel the same childhood feelings. We never left sixth grade. You know, everything is still the playground. We're still trying to find those people that are bullies that we can befriend, we're trying to be the most popular. We're trying to fit in. We're trying to find out, you know, if we get ridiculed, we're trying to avoid that again. So I tie in those triggers to make sure that those triggers don't become your focus throughout the day. It's draining to constantly be in fear and struggle and trying to put on the facade. So the goal is to be so comfortable in yourself that other people find comfort in the fact that they can be themselves. And so that's where we start with individual coaching. But on a leadership level, I get more into the dogma of, you know, what is a leader, you know, and how that operates, because your team will always mimic the environment in which you instill. And so if you're in this place where you're saying just get sales, then your employees are just get sales. They're not caring how they get it. But today's market, brand is so important that you can get a sale, but you'll never have a customer for life, right? So the goal is to understand, how do you create a brand? How do you create a philosophy that is so steadfast in its way that people are attracted to it? Not competing with everybody else, but be your own person. And so it is. You're right. We do get into this couch environment, and I do some pretty fun activities to make people loosen up that way. Coming from Hollywood, you know, and the entertainment industry, I picked up a lot of interesting stories and exercises that make it a lot more fun than people would think.
Talk about that. Were you an actor? In what way were you involved, or did you just live there, or were you actually involved in the quote unquote Hollywood scene?
Wow, that's a loaded question, and that's an hour interview, David. So I grew up in Hollywood, meaning L.A., everybody wants to be famous. So I started mine, I had a record deal as a kid, we didn't have social media then, so I was in these magazines and interviewed as the, you know, an upcoming artist. I was a Soul Train dancer, which is not really famous, but I did do some acting. But really, when I say entertainment industry, I actually, my cousin was a famous rapper, and then I ended up becoming a talent agent for a talent agent where I was casting. I did casting for dancers for music videos and concerts. So for the people like Madonna, Prince, Janet Jackson, Michael Jackson, all those people, they had to find dancers and performers for their shows or videos. I was one of the guys that did all that. And through that, you know, my associations and friendships grew. I ended up becoming friends with people like J-Lo and a few others. Lenny Kravitz was my roommate for a period of time. So I have amazing stories that I tie into the seminars. And what I share is that the entertainment is no different than our industry. You know, it's still about market share. Do I get enough people to like me? Am I selling enough? It's the same stresses that we all have. And you might see them as being completely have it all, but they have the same, they wake up the same amount of fears that we all have. And am I relevant, you know? And
probably more so, yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and I can kind of do the connection that. And how is it that you transitioned to the mortgage industry again?
Well, funny enough, I was getting burnt out. I tell people this, when you don't work for something and it just falls in your lap, you don't really appreciate it, you know? Some people will say that's a renter versus owner, you know? But it's funny. I used to fight as a kid. I was a kickboxer growing up, and I was heavily in the street. I grew up in East LA, so I grew up fighting all the time.
Wow.
Anyway, Taibo got really popular, and boxing got really popular,
right.
And I started teaching a class for fun. And before you knew it, I saw some opportunities, and I created a boxing, kickboxing program throughout California. I ended up training and hiring like 28 people to work under me all throughout the country, and I just developed boxing contracts for health clubs. But I got married, and then when I got married, I was audited, and I was told that I probably should get a real job, and my first job was life insurance sales. And it took me completely out of my element, but it introduced me to people like Jim Rohn, and I was able to really get into the mind space and study the mind and emotional intelligence and neuroscience and things of that nature. And voila, here I am.
That's an amazing story. And Jim Rohn is just amazing. I listen to interviews that he's done and on podcasts, and it's one of those things. He's truly an NLP, a neuro-linguistic programming individual that is probably one of the top of the field in that area,
yes.
I understand correctly. Julian, one of the things I see defeating so many people is self-talk or how they communicate with borrowers. What is it that you're seeing as the greatest need? Let's wrap this interview up by give us the greatest need and how can they overcome it?
Interesting. Well, the greatest need is their own self-talk. You have to step away from what you seem to be, that seems to be normal to you. Self-talk and the way we talk to our customers is universally the same. There's no difference. We talk to them with the same questions. We pick up our habits from everybody around us. The biggest need is understanding that we need to talk differently. We get the same information by taking a different road, right? I mean, so if you think about it, let me give you a great example of that. Have interest in the person's business. Let them teach you something. Don't be an expert. Be a student to your customer. If one of the biggest things I find that we need to think about is our self-employed borrowers. We're getting more of them. And we don't talk to them in the way that we should. We actually are more insulting to a self-employed person than because we're treating them like a W-2 person, if you will. We're treating them as if you need to do this for me. Instead of saying, you know what, hey, if you don't mind, tell me what made you choose your business? What made you start that franchise? What made you open up that business that you're in? I would love to learn what prompted you. Let them give you a 30-minute spew, if they will, on what motivated them. You'll have a friend for life right there. That's
a really good point.
Process. You know, because now you're giving them the opportunity to share their heart, what matters to them. This is a transaction. Don't look at it that way. Look at it like you're meeting somebody for the first time, you're getting to know them. That is the thing we need to learn. If we can do that, you don't have to sell your company. You're branded right there, because they will tell you and they will send you information about their industry, about their field. They will, if you're ever interested in learning more, let me know. They start wanting to talk to you more. And so that's the key that we need to start thinking about. We're not order takers. We are consultants. And one way to be a consultant is to listen more and talk less. Not like I'm doing right now. But that's the thing you should do. You
know, well, I'm asking questions and you're answering them. And it's so important that the mortgage or loan originators out there in the marketplace begin to understand how they could dramatically improve their business and their relationships to the point where at some point in time, you do not have to be out originating and chasing new deals. It should be a buy referral only business within 2 to 3 years.
Interesting enough, one of the struggles we're having now is also retention. And, you know, it's really because that's why I love teaching people to learn themselves. If you're in a mortgage business and you're struggling to get customers, the first thing you're going to look at is my company. We're not doing enough. I can't get it. I can't. That is a mindset. And so what happens is you'll go to another company and have a 3-month honeymoon because they'll promise you all these leads. Next thing you know, same thing happens. So the challenge we're faced with is we're not really looking at the real issue. So my goal is to get you to look at the real issue. It has nothing to do with the company. It has to do with you understanding your business. It has nothing to do with making a sale. It has to do with how you brand yourself in this market. You know, the industry is changing. Millennials have really shifted the way we do business. And there's some companies like, let's take for instance, remember Blockbuster? I mean, that was a $6 billion company. And they're gone because they didn't adjust to the market. You know, Netflix, in less than 6 years, took them off the face of the planet because they thought about the changes of the market. People that do podcasts, they give information nine times, ask for something one. And what we do in our industry, we say, hey, I'm a nice person, give me your business. That is not how we do business anymore in our market. You have to learn the way the mind has shifted, the way people have changed. And it takes a person to want to learn something completely outside of sales training and learn more about self-training, and you will be able to become better at sales. And that's the goal that I want to leave people with.
That's outstanding. If you were to talk to a leader in the mortgage industry right now and had just one thing to say, what would you tell them to start and stop doing?
First of all, third eye introduction. Real quick, that's the biggest problem in entertainment as well. No one wants to tell the celebrity that he's eating too much food, he's gaining weight, or he's doing too many drugs and he's not looking professional on stage, because no one wants to lose their position with that celebrity. So the first thing I would say is get rid of all the yes men. You have to get rid of the people that are telling you what you want to hear, and you got to stop talking about the people who say the same things you say. That's a good thing about third-party consulting. I can come in, I can say exactly what I see from all the companies I've worked with, 40-plus mortgage companies. This is what you're doing. That's the habitual problem for this many companies, and this is what you need to start thinking about. You stop being antiquated. You can't change and be new with the same personality you had yesterday. You have to change your personality. And then start doing is really be dangerous. Fail fast. You know, it's an old statement. Try something new quickly. Fail it fast and move to the next try. Keep moving forward versus analyzing it so much to the point that 10 years goes by and you never really implemented anything. And that's one of the things our industry does a lot, too. We talk about it for days, years, and then we wait for somebody else to do it before we actually do it. And that's what's happened a lot in our industry.
Yep.
Yeah, so the goal is be willing to fail fast and try something new and hire somebody like me to come in and verbally slap you around to the point where you wake up and see opportunities right in front of your face.
I love it, and I mean, we're going to have another conversation about getting more involved with what you're doing, because I really believe this is one of the important needs of our industry, and we're here to transform the industry, and it's interesting you're talking about transformation through thoughts, and I think it's such a great way to do that when you go with your Pivot to Change company. How can people get in touch with you? How do they start that one-on-one dialogue with you, Julian?
Okay, they can go to pivot2change.com or Julian, J-U-L-I-A-N, Sado, S-A-D-O.com and find me there. They can also email me at jsado, S-A-D-O, at pivot2change.com and even call me. I have a local number in Texas. I travel the country, so I live in Texas, but I'm in the center of the nation, so I can go anywhere. But it's 214-945-9700. And I'm available to talk to anybody for 30 minutes to tell them what I think based off of what I see from the market. I'll look at their company. I'll look at their advertisement, their commercials. I'll even make a call to their company and take a false application. I'll ask questions about interest rates or whatnot and give you my assessment of where, you know, some of these neurons are connected and what people may be picking up from your brand and from your company. So, and that's what I love to do. I love to help people get better. It makes me better. If that makes sense.
That's good. Well, I'm impressed. I encourage our listeners to get a hold of you and get into this. And then we're going to have this podcast available, and we're going to have you back as a guest again. But other resources where people can learn more about NLP?
Well, yeah. Well, again, you can type in NLP online. There's a lot of NLP practitioners. I'm one of them. I have a one-day course that I teach the companies and leaders on NLP, and it's an intensive workshop. It's baked into one day. I can break it down into 3 2.5-hour days, but it's an intensive workshop on NLP for the mortgage industry specifically. The difference with me is that I'm a mortgage-backed person. I've been in the mortgage industry for almost 20 years. That's the difference. You have people that are NLP practitioners, they don't tie in the mortgage industry, which makes it completely unique, and you have to build it on your own. So I bring in NLP as a mortgage package and help you understand from processing to closing how that operates your business.
Outstanding. We've got a link to Julian's information on our website. Check it out at lickinonlending.com. Julian, thanks so much for being here with me today.
David, thank you. It's been a pleasure. You've been a person I've used your resources and used your quotes many times in seminars, so it's an honor to actually talk to you and have a conversation about this important topic. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm honored by that. Appreciate you being part of the podcast, telling others about it. Special thank you and shout-out again goes to our sponsors, Arch MI, Black Knight, Open Mortgage, MBA, Lenders One, Mortgage Collaborative, Velma, The Knowledge Coop, and Vidyard. Look forward to having you back next week, everybody. Have a great week, and thank you for telling others about this podcast.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.